This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. Our radio show is heard on Pacifica stations nationwide, and our TV show can be watched on Free Speech TV and on our website. The massive showing at women's marches around the country, and particularly in Washington, D.C., the day after the presidential inauguration, has unnerved Donald Trump's supporters. So much so that some have resorted to a base smear campaign against one of the lead organizers of the march, Linda Sarsour, a proudly Muslim American hijab-wearing feminist. Sarsour is being painted as linked to extremist and terrorist groups and accused of duping American feminists. Among the speakers at the Women's March on Washington, D.C. was another Muslim American woman, Zahra Bilu, the director of CARE San Francisco, who will be joining us in just a moment. Here's an excerpt of her speech at the Women's March.
We are unafraid and will not be silenced. I and American Muslims like me are committed to putting our faith into action. We live and breathe the understanding that justice cannot be for just us, that our liberation is interconnected, that we cannot be free at each other's expense or if any of us remains targeted.
And that's Zahra Bilu speaking at the Women's March on Washington, D.C. She's a community organizer, a civil rights lawyer, and director of CARE San Francisco. CARE is the Council on American Islamic Relations. She now joins me on the program. Welcome to the show, Zahra.
Thank you so much for having me, Sonali. It's always a pleasure to talk to you.
So first, before we get into what's happening with Linda Sarsour, tell us about your experience. The clip that we just played, it was a very unapologetic expression from you of solidarity across faiths, across different communities, that sort of sentiment, if one of us is hurt, we're all hurt. Tell us about that whole experience, what it felt like to see this incredible gathering of women and men and children.
Well, CARE signed on as a national partner to the Women's March when the idea was first conceived pretty early on. And at that time, I think that the best of hopes was that maybe 200, 250,000 people would show up. What happened on Saturday was over 750,000 people showed up in D.C., but also hundreds of thousands more at hundreds of marches across the country and all over the world. There were people for miles. There were people that never saw the stage. There were people that I never saw. And there were times where I remember when we were marching, we could barely move because there were just so many people. Someone asked me, you know, is this the biggest speaking engagement you've ever had? And it was like, I think it's the biggest speaking engagement that Alicia Keys and everyone else on that stage has ever had. Like, it's not common or normal to have such a massive gathering. But that's what's inspiring, is that people are taking to the streets and saying, this isn't okay. We aren't going to tolerate this. And then more importantly, that we are stronger together and we have shared values we want to work towards.
And so in the lead up to the march, there were many features on the organizers, the lead organizers of the Women's March, mainstream magazines profiled the diverse group of women that were behind it. And of course, one of those women was Linda Sarsour. And I'm wondering if you think that the success of the Women's March and the way in which it eclipsed Trump's inauguration has something to do with how, after the march is over, we're seeing these very disturbing attacks on Linda Sarsour.
Absolutely, right? The best evidence that it infuriated the right is that they lashed out, that they were like, this isn't okay. And they targeted the visibly Muslim women and the women, you know, the woman of color that was behind so much of this. They couldn't tolerate that. I was in D.C. both days. My original plan was to actually be in D.C. to protest the inauguration. And then the Women's March was planned and I joined and spoke at that. But the difference, just in terms of the number of people on the streets, was so palpable. Like, it was empty on Friday and it was massively packed on Saturday. And so, of course, they're frustrated, they're worried, and now they want to try to delegitimize the organizers and the effort because they know that it is a direct threat to any of their attempts to undermine our civil liberties as Muslims, as women, as people of color, as poor people, as immigrants, and so on.
So tell us actually what Linda Sarsour represents. I mean, who is she? She's someone who has very reputable credentials among progressives and has a long record of standing up for women's rights, for human rights, right?
Linda is someone that I consider a friend, a mentor, someone that I look up to. And really, the show of support that came out after the attacks on her is itself evidence of her work. She received statements of support from elected officials, from nonprofit organizations across a spectrum of civil rights and human rights issues. Really, the best way to describe her is a leading civil rights and racial justice activist who works to bridge communities and truly understands that an attack on any of us is an attack on all of us.
And so these kind of the kinds of statements that are coming out that she is linked to Hamas, one of the most ludicrous one was a photo of her holding up her index finger as if she's, which is apparently an ISIS sign. I mean, if she was an ISIS member, she certainly wouldn't be broadcasting that.
I mean, exactly, right? And much of the attacks on Linda really fall in line with what we have already seen as Islamophobic tropes or sort of traditional attacks. Is they must be connected to terrorists. If they have a political opinion that is unliked by the right, then they must be not patriotic. They must not be American, and you know, and they're jeopardizing all of us. But in reality, Linda's work is the closest I have seen amongst even my peers to upholding the alleged values we have as a country, which is that everyone deserves equal treatment under the law.
And of course, the other accusation is that she has duped American feminists, you know, this like evil Muslim woman who's come in and just duped these well-meaning white American feminists into thinking that she's one of them.
Oh, gosh. I mean, that's hilarious, too, right? It really undermines the reality that feminism is itself so diverse, that there are different types of feminism. And for a group of critics that seek to support women, to then undermine her agency to choose Islam, to choose to cover herself, and to choose to be an activist, is hypocrisy of the best kind, or the worst kind.
Let's talk about Muslims at the march itself. I mean, you were one of the speakers. Linda, major organizers, also spoke, of course. So setting aside, in addition to the speakers lineup and those who attended, was there a strong showing from the Muslim community as far as you could tell?
I would say there was. In D.C. and then also across the country, we heard from so many Muslim women, men, and, you know, they brought their children with them, too, who attended these marches. And the importance of that was the need for safe spaces for targeted communities to come out and be active and visible, but also for them to be inspired by how many people are standing with each other. It's important to remember that this march was about the targeting of Muslims, refugees, immigrants, and others, but it was also about a woman's right to choose, our access to contraceptives, like the way different communities are targeted, right? And so that was what was most inspiring for a lot of the Muslims that I heard who went, that so many more people went to this, so many diverse people went to this than ordinarily would go to a single issue march.
What do you make of the Shepherd Fairey poster, by the way, that was released before the march that showed an American Muslim woman wearing a hijab of the American flag? I've heard a lot, you know, I saw a lot of people holding copies of it. I've also seen some criticisms of this poster that, you know, the only person who should be draping women with any kind of hijab, whether with an American flag or not, is a Muslim woman herself. That people resented the fact that this white male artist put this image out. What do you think?
Well, that's so interesting. So I haven't heard that critique before. I mean, I wouldn't wear that hijab, one, because I don't want to drape myself in a false sense of patriotism, but also because, as I understand it, that's not how you should treat a flag. Still, it's an iconic image. Many, many people were, you know, intrigued by it, were inspired by it. We saw Muslims and, you know, allies and friends carrying it. Keep in mind, it was one a remake of an original photograph by an artist based in New York who gave Shepherd Fairey permission to do that with his photograph. And so it wasn't a white man putting a flag hijab on a Muslim woman. It wasn't even a Muslim man who did that, the original person, the model, chose to participate in this, right? And so always important to remember that even when we're, you know, trying to protect women, that we not, you know, take away their agency from them. And then, again, the intersectionality, right? So it was really phenomenal that this was part of a series of images that the artist put out that looked at different targeted communities. And I thought it was really great. I think it was the Amplifier Foundation that took out full page advertisements in major newspapers with these poster images on inauguration day. So it was their way of sending a strong message of, you know, the values we're working towards and aspire to.
Right. I want to bring up the fact that the solidarity between different communities is powerful in the face of the attacks, of course, by Trump. Trump has is expected to very soon, as we are recording this interview, discuss his plans to both build a wall between the U.S. and Mexico, as he makes claims about millions of people illegally voting in the election, at the same time as announcing a promised ban of people who are Muslim or coming from Muslim countries. Is this, how scary is this? I mean, he basically said he was going to do this, but we're talking about like day five or six of his administration.
Right. So here's the thing. He promised, Donald Trump promised a ban on Muslim entry into the United States in December of 2015. So more than a year ago. I didn't have any hope that he would wait. And I always say that, you know, we of course should hope for the best, pray for the best, but, you know, make sure that we're prepared for the worst. The reality is this is him fulfilling his promises. And it's also just the first wave of potentially discriminatory policies that we will see from his administration over the next 4 years. If this is what he's doing in his first week, imagine what it looks like a year from now. And so it's important that we, you know, as I said at the Women's March, that we make resistance our lifestyle, that we not give him an inch. And that's not, we don't wait. Like, just because something doesn't target me today doesn't mean that I don't resist, right? I need to resist with everyone else because it's the right thing to do, because it's part of my American values, my Muslim values, and also because it's, you know, it's self-preservation. What happens to one community today can very well happen to my community tomorrow.
Right. The other group that he has targeted, which is sort of part of the anti-Muslim ban, are Syrian refugees. Today, worldwide, among the most vulnerable people anywhere on the planet, right? And it's really interesting to see him pit Syrian refugees against Americans. I mean, I'm seeing, you know, some in the right wing saying we should be taking care of our veterans rather than Syrian refugees. I mean, like, these are both vulnerable communities, though.
Exactly. I mean, and, you know, keep in mind that, like, if you look at the list of countries that's going to be targeted by this potential executive order, they're all Muslim majority. Many, many of them have been bombed by the United States without any accountability or recourse over the last 15 years. And there are also, interestingly, notable countries left off, right? So arguments are, hey, if we, like, if this isn't in line with our values, we have terrorism in the United States, including domestic terrorism by white supremacists. And so targeting Syrian refugees doesn't make any sense. It also just, it doesn't add up, right? Like, it reeks of politics. If you consider, and I'm not advocating for this, but Saudi Arabia isn't on the list, right? And so it's targeting marginalized, bombed countries that are most in need of a place to have their refugees come.
Now, I remember right after September 11th, under the George W. Bush administration, there was a very similar type of temporary ban put on those people entering the United States from, they didn't come out and say Muslim countries, but there was a list of countries and they were all, you know, coincidentally Muslim, quote unquote. How different is what Trump is likely to propose from what we saw right after September 11th?
You know, I know that you've been doing this work for such a long time, but I still appreciate that you remember that period. There are so many people I talk to today who don't believe it's possible, who don't remember that it's happened as recently as the last 15 or 16 years. The thing is, history repeats itself, right? We let the Bush administration get away with it, and that makes it possible for the Trump administration to do it. I also remind people that I do Know Your Rights workshops and community education workshops with that. It was less than 100 years ago that we sent Japanese Americans to internment camps, and it is nearly every day that an unarmed Black person is killed by a police officer in this country. A ban targeting specific countries is abhorrent. it is counter to our values. But is it something that this administration will try in line with what previous administrations have tried? Yes, absolutely, and unfortunately.
Now, Zahra, what is the best response to the kind of demonizing that we will see, not just coming from the administration, but from Trump supporters? I mean, you know, the horrific things that Linda Sarsour is facing probably make her feel worried for her own personal safety. I know you've been targeted in that way. Your organization, CARE, the Council on American Islamic Relations, has been a long time target for the right. And so you must know a thing or two about how to respond to these kinds of attacks.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. For people that are targeted, I would suggest that, you know, that they make sure that they have got safety protocols in place, that they have an emergency plan with their families, and that they're doing basic things like not being alone at night, making sure that they're changing their online passwords frequently, right? Because attacks happen in a number of different ways. And then for people that want to be in solidarity with those who are targeted, some of the things that they can do is, you know, reach out directly to the individual and see what they need, right? And if they're being shy or humble about what they need, then, you know, reach out to some of their friends and say, hey, what can we do to help this person? If we're talking about helping targeted communities, honestly, reaching across just into the community and expressing solidarity can be so powerful. If we look at what was so inspiring about the response to the attacks on Linda this past couple of days, it wasn't just the Muslims who stood up for her and who said, you know, I march with Linda. It was Bernie Sanders. It was Amnesty International. It was so many different people from different walks of life. And now, even just today and tomorrow, as this is being recorded, when different executive orders come down, it's you know, there's a sense of relief if the executive order doesn't target my, what I might define as my community. And even still, it's important that I reach out and broaden my sense of community and stand with others who are targeted now more than ever before.
Right. There's been a social media campaign, hashtag no ban, no wall. Yes. Those two phrases unite two targeted communities, undocumented Absolutely. Immigrants from Latin America, Muslims here in the country, and Muslims from abroad, which is pretty powerful. And they're simple words, hashtag no ban, no wall. And also, as you were saying, the hashtag I march with Linda, which a lot of people have been posting to their social media accounts. And those expressions are very powerful, certainly. Finally, also, if someone feels like their civil rights have been targeted, your organization is a leading civil rights organization for particularly Muslim Americans. Should they get in touch with CARE directly?
Absolutely. So if someone is, you know, contacted by law enforcement, is turned away at an airport, experiences a hate crime or anything of that sort, they can just go to CARE.com. That's CAIR.com. And use the report an incident button to, you know, tell us what happened and get advice from our civil rights and legal staff.
Zahra, thank you for all the work that you do and for being on our program. I'm sure we'll have you back on again.
Thank you for having me, Sonali. It's always a pleasure.
Zahra Bilu is a community organizer, civil rights lawyer, and director of CARE San Francisco. She was one of the speakers at the Women's March on Washington, D.C. CARE.com is that website, CAIR.com. This is Rising Up with Sonali. I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can sign up for our newsletter at risingupwithsonali.com to get daily emails with links to all our stories.